Hi, everyone, and welcome to episode 317 of the Professional Book Nerds Podcast, presented by Overdrive. This is Jill. Hello, Adam.
How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm excited for today's episode. By the time you guys hear this, in like 1 or 2 days, I'll be going to Florida, which I'm excited to be going back to Wizarding World of Harry Potter. I don't even know if I told you that. Yes, I did. We talked about it.
You told me. We talked about it.
Alex and I are doing the fast passes. But yeah, I'm excited to get out of our never-ending winter here. It won't end.
No, it won't.
I feel like when we were kids, winter started around like Thanksgiving, and then I don't remember when it ended, but it feels like now it starts way later and then just goes on in perpetuity. It never stops.
It never ends.
So, but I'll be in Florida, so it's fine. I'll survive. And I was in Arizona last week. So.
Plus, it's daylight savings. Like we would.
Seriously? Already?
As of yesterday, Sunday.
Wait, seriously?
I'm...
Hold on. We're going to keep all this in. Let's look this up in real time.
March 10th. Sunday, March 10th.
Oh, my God. That's exciting. Get an hour of sunlight back.
We have to spring forward, though, so we lose an hour on that first Sunday. So
Just one, though. Just one Sunday. That's what I always laugh in the when it falls back, everyone's like, "Yeah, we got an hour more of sleep." I'm like, "Yeah," and you lose an hour of light every single day for the next day. Wow, that is, you just made my day. That's very exciting. Anywho, wow, that's awesome. Okay, today's episode.
It is so totally not clear that we're recording this in advance.
Yeah, seriously. Oh my God! Wait, just yesterday I got an extra hour of sunlight. So today's episode is an interview I did with Victoria/V.E. Schwab, depending on if you read her adult or her YA stuff. And March is like the month of Victoria. She had her Steel Prince Volume 1, which is graphic novels set in the world of her Darker Shades of Magic books. That came out at the beginning of this month. And then The Near Witch, which was the first book she ever wrote, was republished as well, or is being republished this week, but when this comes out. So that's really cool, and there's all sorts of collector's editions of her other stuff. And she was just a blast to talk to. The format of this interview is a little bit different, because when I called her, she immediately told me that she loves audiobooks, and we just started giving each other audiobook recommendations back and forth for a while. And then I was recording all that, and after like 15 minutes, I was like, we should probably talk about your books.
It's fine.
I bet your publisher would like that. So
it's fine.
I'm going to try and cut everything so it makes sense, but if it seems like it jumps around more than a normal conversation, it's because I'm going to try and rearrange it so it makes sense. But we'll see what happens. It should be obvious by this point that while we're recording this, I haven't edited the episode yet. If people want to get a hold of us, how can they do that?
Then go to our website, professionalbooknerds.com. From there, you can get all of our social links. We are on Twitter and Instagram at ProBookNerds. You can join our Viber community from there. And you can email us directly at professionalbooknerds@overdrive.com.
Yes, you can. And you can like use that extra hour of sunlight to go take a walk and listen to our podcast or something. I just wanted to bring it back full circle.
Yeah, I picked up on that.
Uh-huh. Anything else you think people should know about?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoy this very fun conversation with the wonderful Victoria Schwab on the Professional Book Nerds Podcast. That's true. By the way, speaking of fantasy, I can actually ask you some interview questions now because we kind of rolled into it. So,
I guess so.
Yeah, I know. Whatever. So the thing that I'm supposed to be asking you about is actually the awesome comics, the Steel Prince comics just recently came out, and there's some more coming out, I think, in March, right?
The first bind-up, so the first trade paperback comes out in March, and then the second arc of the comics, 5 through 8, will start in April.
Oh, that's so long from now. They're so good.
Oh, thank you. It's been really terrifying because at least I know I have like a following in fantasy.
Uh-huh.
And then you come into comics and you're the new kid again and you're like, oh, God, like nobody is going to get why I'm doing this or what I'm doing. But I've really had a lot of fun.
Well, so for people who are listening in, I'm doing a horrible job of describing them, but they're kind of like comics in the world of the Shades of Magic stuff. So can you kind of dive into why you wanted to you know, why you wanted to make these comics and the stories that you wanted to tell?
Sure. So there, for those who don't know, the comics are called Steel Prints, and at least the first arc is called the Steel Prints, and they are a prequel to the Shades of Magic series. So they're set roughly 30 years before the start of A Darker Shade of Magic. And they follow the king, Maxim Maresh, before he's king, when he's a prince. And they follow these series, the three arcs follow the three feats that gave him the reputation of the Steel Prince. So, yeah, that's kind of the spoiler-free. I wanted to do it because, interestingly, you know, I always thought, I'm not going to write fantasy. I'm not going to write anything with a big world. I don't have the attention span. And then I wrote Shades of Magic, and I got about halfway through book three and was like, oh, no, I have more story than I have pages left here. And I'm a fairly firm believer in wanting to not veer off course in the narrative. Like, mm-hmm. I know there are some authors, from Stephen King to Brandon Sanderson, who will tangent mm-hmm. in the middle of a book and kind of give you a glimpse into a different character's path. I just didn't want to do that. And so I ended up with some threads, some paths that I couldn't explore in the course of the narrative. And then Tor, my publisher, picked up the next three books in the series. And that then accounted for moving forwards in time, because the next three books, which are called Threads of Power, the first are called Shades of Magic, Threads of Power is set 7 to 8 years after the end of Conjuring of Light. So then I knew I was moving forward in time, but I still had these stories that were happening just offshoots that I knew, kind of these tangential narratives that had happened before the start of Shades of Magic. And I didn't want to make them books as well, because I didn't want to move both forward and backwards in the world at the same time. Mm-hmm. Kind of had my hands full. And then when Titan, who's my UK book publisher, but also has Titan Comics, mm-hmm. which is a very big comics arm, asked me if I would ever be interested in writing a comic, my answer was, oh yeah, that'd be super cool, but I don't really want to play in somebody else's sandbox. Mm-hmm. Like, I've seen the way that can kind of turn toxic with, like, communal ownership of a fandom mm-hmm. and of the content. And I really had my hands full with my own fandom. And then they were like, oh, well, but why don't you just write a comic that's set in your world? And I was like, I can do that? Like, you think, like, and they're like, yes, Victoria, like, we would let you do that. And so they were like, do you have any stories that you would like to tell that you didn't get to tell in Shades of Magic? And so it was just very fortuitous, because I had mentioned offhand in Conjuring of Light these three feats that made Maxim Maresh's reputation. Mm-hmm. And now I had this perfect medium in which to tell it.
Well, and it also lets you, you know, I would imagine that it lets you tell more stories in a, I don't want to say a short amount of time, but like the story that you're writing,
yeah.
it's such a different style than what you're
normally
doing.
And I don't have to use 500 pages.
Yeah.
Like, I can tell it in, you know, a shorter format. I can tell it in a different way. And plus, on top of that, selfishly, Shades of Magic is a really visual series. It's a series about magic. I say it's like Harry Potter meets Avatar, The Last Airbender. And it's one of those things where I've always wanted to see it portrayed visually. And mm-hmm. so Steel Prince gave me the opportunity to not only codify the appearance of some of the characters, but to give readers an idea of what I envision magic looks like. And I did hear from some readers who were like, aren't you worried that, you know, readers want to be able to visualize something for themselves, and now you're telling them what it looks like? And to that, my answer is, I'm telling you what I think it looks like. You should look at the comics as a way to see what the author intended something to look like. Whether you think it looks differently or not is totally fine, but it's like, for those readers who want to get some insight into how I envision pieces of this world, the comics are a really cool way to do that.
I imagine you got to be fairly involved in the, like, the visual direction because of the, you know, with the existing universe and the coloration and everything. Like, I imagine you probably were more involved with that than a normal writer would be in a comic situation.
I mean, I think it varies. I think a writer's involvement definitely varies, but I think readers are often surprised to find out how involved I am. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, I write all of the scripts.
Mm-hmm.
I write every issue, from the dialogue to the art. Sorry, my dog just tried to jump on me.
No, you're
from
good.
My dialogue to my art direction. I am fairly I would say I am as involved as I can be, while still wanting to give my artists themselves the creative freedom to do what they do best. Like, I'm coming into this from a fiction standpoint. I'm not coming into this room and saying, I know how the best way for every comic to be shown. Like, these are, you have to look at it as a different art form and a different industry. And so I'm definitely learning as I go. And at the same time, I'm very fortunate in having a really strong creative team that's giving me that space to learn and still giving me the direction when I want it and still helping me learn this new medium because I am very new to it.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, speaking of the medium and creating the stories in it, we were talking a little bit before, I think before I started recording, about a mutual friend of ours, of Yin Chang. You were on 88 Cups of Tea a while back. And one of the things you guys were talking about was, I think she had a question from like a listener or something that asked you about what feels more natural between writing for middle grade and young adult voice and adult voice. So kind of to play off that, I'm curious, what was the process like for you to write a story that then becomes a comic? Like, were you taking a huge chunk of what would normally be maybe 50 to 75 pages of a story, like writing it out and then figuring out how to visually represent that with 50 words, or just, it just feels like such a different way to tell a story.
It is a very different medium, but I would compare it more towards learning a language. Like, they say that the trick with, so like the only other language I speak is French. And they say that it's actually a really bad habit to get into, to try and translate from English to French in your head. You have to get to the point where you learn to think in French. Mm-hmm. Because if all you're ever doing is translating from English to French, you're never actually going to grasp the nuances of the language. So because of that, I'm trying really hard to learn to think in a comic format and in a 22-page format and in a, 1 to 6 or 7 panels per page format to try and learn to think in the specific language of comics rather than to just be adapting. Now, it's something that I am definitely learning because thinking in a 22-page story format, this episodic format, is not very familiar to me. If anything, I'm lucky in that I'm already kind of a visual writer. I already think of things quite visually, quite cinematically. I have to kind of choreograph and picture an entire scene before I start writing it. So in that way, that's really the only advantage that I had. But even still, it's just a different form. And I will say that I tend to think of my books as a series of interlocking episodes or escalating episodes. And in that way, it helps. But I still don't think naturally in 22 pages. I'm editing the fifth comic right now, and that part is really not normal for me. And so I do have to find myself simplifying in some ways and codifying. And maybe I would have 5,000 words to tell this particular episode if I were writing it in fiction, but I only have, really 30 to 40 lines of dialogue to do it in my comic.
Well, and something really cool that you do with the comics is, you're talking earlier about when you had the opportunity to write comics and Titan basically said, create a comic in your own universe. Something that you do that I was laughing about because I remember reading the Shades of Magic books, and the first one, really laying out the story of the multiple Londons and the color and everything. And so you really beautifully like painted this picture and built this world. Whereas in the comic, the first thing you see if you open these comics, it's a description. It's basically those pages as a one panel description, which is,
I know,
but it's awesome because to me, you're talking about using your existing fandom, but like this, I think this is the perfect way to kind of build a new fandom, because someone could pick this up and be able to understand the story, right away without having read those books.
Well, the goal is that somebody can come to Steel Prince without having read Shades of Magic. So for those who don't know what we're talking about, there is a 2-page spread at the beginning of the comics that essentially summarizes, 200 years ago, all of the Londons were connected, and then this bad thing happened, and now they're all apart. This is the London that the story takes place in. Because it was really the only thing that needed to be explained for you to have an entry point into the book, into the comics. But it was something we worked on really hard, because I was like, okay, in every other way, you can just come to the comics without reading the books. But this is the one thing you really need to understand, because it's a central motivator for Maxim, and it explains, in case we want to move in the future, into other pieces of the Red Londons and the White Londons and the Gray and Black Londons universe. It explains what happened so that we can do that. It's really the only piece of information that it was not possible to do the comics without the reader having that one primer, if you will.
Yeah, it really is. It's just such a smart way of doing things, because I feel like that's something that people who are trying to get into comic books, it can be a little overwhelming, because we've actually done episodes of the podcast before. We have a bunch of people in our office who are comic book people, and
yeah,
they'll come in and they'll offer comic book recommendations, but they do a nice disclaimer of saying, hey, this is a comic that you probably don't want to jump into, you know, on you know, the 20th
definitely
iteration, but this is something where, and you have this panel on at least the first four issues.
And yeah.
It's so smart. It's so smart. This isn't even a question. This is just me, like, showering you with praise.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I tried, because I did want to make the Steel Prince comic something that readers, that new readers could come to and then come to Shades of Magic from it. But it was a tricky thing, and perhaps it's a little cumbersome for some comics readers, because it is a little info dumpy, but it was kind of a very important info dump. So I think comics readers so far have forgiven me that.
That's good. All right. So I told you before we started recording, you have a ton of fans here at Overdrive, and one of them,
thank you.
Yeah, and one of them wanted me to ask you a question about, you know, the past couple of years you've had so many novels that have come out sort of like back to back to back. First off, I don't know when you sleep, but I know this.
I love sleep, but not very much these days with a puppy.
Yeah, well, that's very true. So, but I'm curious, this year, I know you obviously have the comics that we were talking about coming out, but you don't have any novels coming out. So does that feel like a brush of breath, or, brush of breath air? Is it something that you're a little, I know that there's always, like, no matter how successful a writer is, there's that complex of worrying about the next novel. So, like, how has it felt different this year knowing that?
So, hold on, sorry, I'm putting a t-shirt on my dog because she had surgery and she keeps licking her stomach. So imagine me literally trying to, like, dress a dog baby while, okay, I'm back. Okay, so I do have one novel out this year, but it's a middle grade, so it's for children, called Tunnel of Bones, which is the second book in the City of Ghosts series. But for the most part, yeah, it's an interesting phenomenon for me. Really, there's an 18-month window where I'm quite a bit slower, and part of that, to be very honest, is simply because my last few books have taken a lot out of me, and so I got progressively farther and farther behind in my schedule, because obviously readers see the front end of an author's schedule. They see the books hitting shelves, but they don't see the 24 months that happen before the book hit shelves, and if an author isn't working a solid year and a half to 2 years into their schedule, like, ahead, they get behind. So people don't notice on the front end that I fall behind because my books are coming out on time. But the problem is, by the time the books are coming out, I should have finished writing the next book. And that's the thing that I fall behind on when I'm traveling so much and when I'm promoting. And so the last two or three books, my margins have shrunk in terms of how much time I have between when the book is actually finished and when the on sale date is and the tour starts. And so for that reason, I have this little bit of what looks to the outside like a gap in my schedule. What on the inside is simply me trying feverishly to catch up on work. So it's a bit weird. I have a little bit of a neurosis. I'm definitely afraid that I'm going to, like, disappear from the public conscience if I don't have a book out every 6 months. Mm-hmm. I'm very neurotic about this. But I am currently working on my next adult project, which is a very, very, very daunting book, in that I've been working on it for 8 years. Mm-hmm. And so I'm trying to find the headspace to both be a little better at humaning and at balancing my life and working on this very daunting book, and trying to trust that my readers will still be there if I take what looks like a 2-year window between novels.
Well, it's funny you say it, you know, because of all the different, first off, I didn't know the Tunnel of Bones was coming out this year. That's awesome. That's the, for people.
Yeah.
I love the first Cassidy Blake book that you wrote. It was really,
Real, oh, thank you.
Yeah, I thought that. I didn't know that Tunnel of Bones was coming out this year. That makes me really excited.
Yeah.
And actually,
out in September.
I actually just looked it up while you were talking, because I was like, wait a minute, I didn't know that. And then for people who are a fan of your Cassidy Blake books, that's becoming a TV series, right?
Well, who knows? You know, it's in the works. I have several projects in the works, but I have had several projects in the works before, and I am now what I call a popcorn and, like, optimist. So basically, when I can sit in a movie theater with a bucket of popcorn, or when I can sit in front of my television with a bucket of popcorn and watch it, then I will believe that it's happening, and not until that point. But yes, it's in development right now. I've had a huge amount of fun. It's the creepy, fun book series that I wish I had when I was 10. Like, it is equal parts scary and funny and fun. And the second book is set in, the first book is set in Edinburgh, Scotland, obviously. The second book is set in Paris, France. And it's just been so much fun.
Yeah, there, I liked that.
But yeah, otherwise, it's a bit of a, it's a bit of a lull.
Yeah. Actually, I described the Cassidy Blake books to the first one to someone, like, it's almost like the R.L. Stine Goosebumps books that I read growing up, but with a better sense of humor. Like,
Aww, thank you.
If that makes sense, you know, because those are, I feel like those books,
yeah,
I've read every single one of them as a kid. Those were the ones that we would, like, pretend to be reading a book for school, but I'd actually have that inside the cover. But it's like there weren't, there wasn't a lot of humor in those. It was always just very much,
no,
something horrible going on.
And I think maybe it's coming off of Shades of Magic that I learned this, that the darker the story, the funnier it needs to be. Like, I'm a really firm believer in needing to get the reader to laugh so that they exhale the breath they're holding. So, like, I think that the scary or the adventure or the, you know, the horror or the murder, whatever it is, all the dark forces in a book are much more potent if they're interrupted by moments of levity.
I think you just described why you and I are both fans of comedic memoirs, because that's basically...
Yes.
Most of those have both of those through lines in there, yeah.
What was it, Steve Martin?
Oh, Born Standing Up.
Yeah, also, I just listened, it's not a comedy one, but from an actor's standpoint, The Life in Parts by Bryan Cranston. I also love it because audiobooks are narrated so often by the people. And so when I'm listening to a memoir or an autobiography or a biography, like, it's nice to get that insight into a celebrity's life or into a comedian's life.
One that I highly recommend if you haven't listened to it yet is Eric Idle's. It's called A Sort of Biography.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's Always Look on the Bright Side of Life is what it's called. And
okay, wait, hold on, Eric Idle. Because I basically, at this point, I'm out of memoirs and autobiographies. Like, I have listened to all of them. I am pretty sure I have listened to almost every audiobook of an autobiography or memoir.
Yeah, so his, like, in the book he talks about it, his life... It's almost, he, like, at towards the end of the book, he said something along the lines, he's like, it's gonna sound like I'm bragging, but I literally only know famous people. So, like, his,
yeah,
like, his best friend was George Harrison.
I just placed a hold on it through
Overdrive. Oh, you are gonna love it. He comes off, like, a little bit pompous sometimes, but he brings it up. He's like, I'm sorry, I know that this sounds braggart, but it's, this is the life
I live. Do you have any other recommendations, just because I'm that person who's constantly desperate for more things to listen to?
Absolutely. Okay, so H. John Benjamin, the guy who does the voice of, like, Archer and Bob's Burgers.
Oh, yeah? Does he have one?
Yeah, it's called Failure is an Option, which is really, really good. And then Guy Branum is also a stand-up comedian. He has one called My Life is a Goddess.
I read that one.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, I loved it.
Let's see what else.
I loved it. I actually, you know what came out this year that I was really, really impressed by? And I didn't expect to be, but I was like, I'm going to listen to it anyway because it's my jam. But it turned out to be really, really good is Busy Phillips, This Will Only Hurt a Little.
Yeah, that one is also really good.
I was really, really pleasantly surprised by it.
Trying to think of other ones I can tell you about. Ghostbusters' daughter. Okay, so this one, that one is the daughter of Harold Ramis, Violet Ramis, I think her name is. And it basically, they had a really, her childhood was really, really different. They had a very kind of non-conformist upbringing. And she just talks a lot about how crazy it was that her, you know, like Bill Murray to her was Uncle Bill for a long time, and just like these just random stories where it's really, but it's also, now that he's passed away, it's very poignant. And she talks about you know, just how much she misses him and stuff like that. And then there's another one. You're a Parks and Rec fan, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so do you know the name Harris Whittles?
No.
Okay, so Harris Whittles was one of the main writers, and he was also a stand-up comedian. And this is a bit of a downer, but he overdosed on heroin like 2 years ago. And not two years ago at this point. It was actually a while ago. But his sister, Stephanie Whittles Walks, wrote a book called Everything is Horrible and Wonderful.
Okay, hold on. I'm typing it in.
Yeah. It's like a bright yellow cover.
This is such good. I haven't. Oh, I see it. Yay. Oh, I can borrow the audiobook. Hello. I literally go through probably 40 to 50 audiobooks a year.
Oh, yeah.
And it drives me crazy because it's genuinely the only genre in which I am basically caught up. So it sucks. It's like, I will never get caught up in the fantasy. I will never get caught up in sci-fi. I will never get caught up in so many categories. But if there is like a celebrity memoir, I have listened to it. So it's so hard because every time I ask for recommendations, which I do a lot because I'm always curious what people are reading. I mean, I'll get like 500 recommendations on Instagram on a post, and I've read every single one of them. I'm like, come on, guys, I need you to think outside the box. So thank you for recommending genuinely. Four that I have not read. This never happened.
Oh, man. That is so... Well I'm trying
People
to think.
People always hit me with the obvious. They're like, have you read Trevor Noah? And I'm like, who do you think I am? Of course I read Trevor Noah's autobiography or listened to it. Like, I've listened to all of them.
Okay, so what about what about Carrie Ellis' one about the making of Princess Bride? Did you...
Oh, obviously. Okay. Obviously. Because, like, The Princess Bride is my favorite movie of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And I am a fencer. And I'm a fencer because I was 13 years old and I watched The Princess Bride and became obsessed with the concept of sword fighting from it. So, like, so getting to hear about the way they trained for that and the way they used world-class fencers, and then they got so good at it that they had to add more to the routine. I love everything about that book.
Okay, just as a heads up, I started recording because I normally would do like an intro, which I'll do in a second, and then I'll pull it back, but I was like, well, this is really good stuff.
We might as well.
Okay, so this one, I feel like you're going to say yes for sure, especially because you live in Scotland, but did you read Alan Cumming's Not My Father's Son?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, I love that one.
Okay.
I love that one. I'm telling you, you're not going to catch me again with one I haven't read. You're going to have to work harder.
This is really, really difficult because I am trying. I actually am in the same boat you are, where it's like I've run out of biographies and autobiographies to read.
I really enjoyed Tiffany Haddish, Last Black Unicorn. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed the Gabriel, I'm forgetting her last name, We Need More Wine, Gabriel Union.
Yeah.
I absolutely loved Retta's.
Yeah.
That just came out. Okay, wait, have you listened to, I'm going to recommend that one to you, because I think it's maybe one of my favorites now, Nell Scovell.
No.
She's a Hollywood writer. Hers is absolutely brilliant. I'm going to pull up the title for you. I recommend this one to the moon and back for writers, for readers, for anything. It's called Just the Funny Part. Nell Scovell has worked on almost every like big television show. And she talks about the Hollywood Boys Club. She talks about how shows get made. She talks about creativity. And honestly, like her audiobook, there were so many times that it was, I wish I had had it in paper because I wanted to quote things. Like I wanted to highlight.
Nell Scovell. All right. Just the funny part. Yeah. Is that what you said?
Just the funny part.
Okay. I am putting this on hold as soon as we get done. Okay. I have two more for you. And then I swear to God, we'll start talking about your books. First off, this one obviously isn't read by him, but did you read or listen to the Mr. Rogers, Won't You Be My Neighbor?
I haven't yet, because I just looked at the documentary and I was worried I was just going to have too many feelings.
You'll have feelings, but it was LeVar Burton who does the audiobook.
Oh, okay. I'm going to have to do it.
Yeah, that's The Good Neighbor. And then the other one actually doesn't come out till March, and I think the audiobook's coming at the same time, but Has a Person Been More, like, You Two Are Simpatico, is I have a, there's a podcast called Reading Glasses, which is another reading podcast, obviously, and one of the co-hosts' name is Mallory O'Meara, and she's a total badass. I'm happy to like connect you to, but she wrote a book so her book is coming out in the beginning of March, and it's about Millicent Patrick, who's the creator that didn't get any credit of the design for the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yes, okay, I've heard about this book. Okay, remind me of the name.
So it's called The Lady from the Black Lagoon. Okay. And Mallory is, like, she's just the most badass person that I've ever gotten the chance to interact with.
Oh, I have heard everyone I know has been talking about this one on the nonfiction side, and I want it so badly, so I'm very excited to hear that.
Yeah, she sent me a copy of an advanced reader copy, because we're gonna have her on the podcast. Even, I mean, she's been on before to talk about, like, horror books and stuff, just whenever she wants, but this one, it's, like, it's not just because I'm friends with her, like, it's one of the best books I've read in a long time.
Oh, I can't wait.
Yeah, so.
I can't wait. I already had The Good Neighbor on hold on my Overdrive, so I'm on top of it.
So which library do you use, by the way?
I use Nashville. Okay. Because that's where I was living when I opened the account.
Yeah.
And because I technically kind of still live there too, I split my time between Nashville and Scotland.
Yeah.
Which is weird. But I still technically live in both places.
So are
I'm not
you,
cheating.
are you, because actually, when my wife and I, in a couple years for our 10-year anniversary, we're going to do England, Ireland, Scotland. So are you, like, in Edinburgh? Is that where you're?
I am. So I actually live in a neighborhood called Portobello, which is, Edinburgh is, like, 2 miles from the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone thinks of it as like a city on a hill, but it's actually like a city on a volcanic rim, and it's 2 miles from the sea. And so Portobello is right on the sea. So I hesitate to even call it a suburb, because by American distance standards, it's still like Edinburgh's only like 3 miles across. but so I live like 2 miles outside of Edinburgh city center, and I live I live 2 blocks from the sea.
Okay, that is super cool. Yeah, and like that's basically where we want to spend. Like, we're gonna do a couple weeks over there, and that's where we want to spend the bulk of our time. So that is.
It is genuinely. I mean, there's a reason that I live here. I came to Edinburgh for the first time when I was 22, and absolutely miserable. I was living in a shed in somebody's backyard in Liverpool, which is a very long story, and I needed to get away for a couple of days. And I was broke, and I didn't have the money for it, but I saved up like £200 for this trip to Edinburgh, because I'd always wanted to see it. And from the moment that I stepped off the train, it felt like all of the silt inside me settled and I was home.
Oh my God. That is so cool. That is such a awesome story, especially because, like, also would have been hilarious if you were saying, like, yeah, I live here, but it's not that great. Like, if I'm just, it's fine.
I know. I mean, I did, like, move to another country because I loved it so much. I also think as a writer, it's important to, like, as someone who, not just a writer, but as someone who travels probably, like, 75% of the year for work, it's important to me that the place I come home to is just that, is, like, a nest, is some place that I feel serves me on a soul level.
Also, speaking of your house and your apartment, because I remembered you talking to Yin about this, about your bookshelf, your like synesthesia style bookshelf. I have to tell you, I was in an argument with one of my coworkers a couple weeks ago about this. Like, I use our podcast Twitter to like yell at her, and she was very mad at me about it, because she does the same thing you do, where she kind of makes it like a rainbow. And she didn't give me good reasoning for it, but your reasoning makes sense, that they're your books, you know where you put them, and you're also, they're art, they're not...
I was going to say, I don't reread, so, which is, I know, like, it's one of those things that draws gasps from the crowd for a writer to say, but I don't. For most of the time, unless it's for a very specific reason, or I'm craving something just insanely specific, my to-read pile is so tall that I don't reread, but I love having books, and many of them are signed, because that is one of the luxuries of my job. And so, for me, the books I have already read and the books that I own need to also function as decoration and as art. In fact, right before this call, I was Googling rainbow bookshelves, because when I moved out of my apartment in Nashville, I had to dismantle my rainbow bookshelf and bring it here. And the shipment, which is 30 boxes of books, just arrived this afternoon. And so I'm now trying to decide, because I actually have 2 smaller bookshelves in this apartment. I'm Googling images of rainbow shelves to figure out how I'm going to do this, how I'm going to design this particular set of shelving this time, because I have to feel like I have to do it again but I have to do it in a slightly different way because I have less room. And so I'm seeking inspiration. But I absolutely, for me personally, I stand by the rainbow shelves, but I don't, it's not prescriptive. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't tell people who are neurotic, like, I'm neurotic in different ways, but I'm also intensely visual, so mm-hmm. it doesn't bother me. It makes me happy. But if it stresses people out to not have books by an author together or to not have, you know, God forbid, a series separated by a shelf, then I totally understand. You got to do whatever makes you happy.
Well, and I will say, because my wife and I actually just, we just built and moved into a house finally after like a year's worth of delays. And when she was pulling out our, ironically, 30 boxes of books was what we had as well. She was doing the same thing where she was putting them up because I'm not allowed to do our interior design stuff. She's just way better at it. Like, our house looks like a catalog because she has talent. And I would just mess it up, and I think it's important to know my faults with that. But she, she'll do books by author together, but then she'll also do kind of, like, thematically. So, like, your books are mm-hmm. right by kind of, like, Neil Gaiman's books and Leigh Bardugo's books, but that ends up making them kind of look similar in color most times anyway.
I was going to say, the fantasy has its own palette, doesn't
right.
it?
Yeah, it's exactly. It's all like the...
I am trying to decide if I'm going to separate by fiction and nonfiction this time, but I don't actually own a lot of nonfiction because so many of my friends and colleagues that I buy the books to support them mm-hmm. are fiction writers, and so much nonfiction, as I said, I listen to through either Overdrive or Audible, that I, like, own it digitally. I almost never own a nonfiction book without reason, unless it's a research book. I almost never own it, and so it doesn't even work for me to separate them by fiction and non-fiction. I don't know. I'm feeling very unsettled today because all of my boxes of books are asking me what I'm going to do with them.
Well, we did...
Also, if you hear, like, a shuffle sound in the background, I'm sorry, my eight-month-old puppy is trying to eat my hand.
Listen, I have an eight-year-old and six-year-old puppy, they're permanent puppies, and normal. I do, like, I do several of these podcasts from my house sometimes, and they're in the background, so honestly, that is always welcome, but...
Okay.
So we do YA and then, like, adult, but that doesn't really work either because, again, people like you and Neil Gaiman and others, you write everything.
I was going to say, where do you put us?
So she has put you in YA, but tend to do, like, I don't know, we always also lump in fantasy with YA, like, no matter how mature the fantasy is, which is an absurd notion, but yeah, so she put...
And maybe it's the crossover of the audience, you know? Maybe it's the fact that, like everyone's always like, oh, we're going to get new adult fantasy, and I was like, that's just fantasy. Like, most fantasy protagonists are in their early 20s, you know?
Absolutely.
It's just, we are technically the young adult fiction.
So we do on every podcast with our authors a series of 9 questions called the Nerd 9. They're lighthearted. We like alliteration, really, the only reason that they're named that. So these are, don't give too much thought to these, not that we hit anything super heavy in our conversations here, but what's the last book you finished reading? I think you told me.
Weirdly, the last book that I finished reading, I finished it yesterday, I cannot believe I hadn't read it sooner, I'm going to get so much shame for this, is Douglas Adams' The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
That, you know what, you won't get any shame from me, so that's okay. I think it's totally okay. Okay, what's your favorite place to read?
My favorite place to read is in bed.
What book made you kind of fall in love with reading when you were a kid?
So, I've said this before. I know it sounds super trite, but you have to remember that I'm 31. I picked up Harry Potter when I was 11.
Mm-hmm.
I picked it up the year that it came out and the year that Harry Potter himself was 11, and I had the immense luxury of growing with Harry Potter. I'm not sure it's possible to recreate that in any way. And so I have to say that up until the Harry Potter books, I had never had the experience of reading where I forgot that I was reading, like where the mm-hmm. page disappeared and I was just in the story. So that was such a transformative experience for me.
You, again, no guilt here. I am 33, so I had the exact same experience. And also, on my left forearm, I literally have 7 tattoos that make one long line, and they're all Harry Potter stuff. So,
I love that.
So you're,
I love it. Also, I am. So did you're of the generation, too, where you, like, grew up mm-hmm. you would hear the trailer music and yeah. it had that like the harp noise, oh, the yeah. little xylophone, and it just gives you full body chills.
Oh yeah, that's still the, like, if I'm doing my own personal writing, that's still the soundtrack I put on every single time. Yeah, 100%.
They're very, very good soundtracks.
So what's one place you'd like to travel that you have not yet been to?
Japan.
Ooh, there you go. Do you have a favorite holiday to celebrate?
Oh, Christmas.
Coffee or tea?
Which is really funny because I'm like a pagan Jew.
That's amazing.
Tea.
The next one is cats or dogs? I think I know the answer.
Really, both. Oh. I have a dog, but all my dog wants in this life is a cat. Oh. So.
Okay, that's fair. How about favorite food?
Dark chocolate. And like, really dark chocolate.
Like the, like, 85%?
Like 80%. Yeah. Yeah.
And then if you could have dinner with one person, alive or dead, who would you pick?
Oh, probably Neil Gaiman. I've had drinks with Neil and I've had lunch with Neil, but he's one of my heroes, but also just such an easy and really wonderfully genuine person to be around. I'm always looking for another opportunity.
I am fanboying so hard right now that... What a sentence. I've had drinks with Neil Gaiman. That's wonderful.
Yeah. Also, but it's also nice. You're always told never meet your heroes, and it's really nice when you can have an exception to that rule.
Yeah, and I feel like at least for like 99% of the authors I've gotten to meet who I would consider like hero people, they've lived up to the hype. So that
makes me very happy.
Yeah. I have had very few bad interactions with us. So, okay,
sorry.
Last question before I stop our recording. What do you hope readers take away from reading your books and your comics?
Oh, you know, I get asked this question a lot, and I know it's supposed to be a super short answer, but I don't honestly know how to answer it, because the idea with my books is that they should just make you forget who you are for a little while and like the person that you become on the page. Like, they should make you want to be the people in the book.
That is.
And so I guess I just hope people finish. I mean, the goal for every writer is that you finish a book a little bit different than when you started it.
That is awesome. Victoria, this was so much fun. Thank you for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for all of the recommendations. My reading list has been replenished.
Readers can sample and borrow the titles mentioned in today's episode from Overdrive.com, and our library friends can add these titles to their collections and marketplace.
My name is Cindy Burnett, and each week I interview at least two traditionally published authors on my podcast, Thoughts from a Page. We talk spoiler-free about their books, so you can listen whether you have read the book or not, and then we delve into things that you most likely won't hear about anywhere else. The importance of the cover design, why they included various aspects of the story, personal details about both the books and the authors' lives, and so much more. You can find the podcast on every major platform and learn more about it on my website, thoughtsfromapage.com. Thanks so much for checking it out.